Hello, and welcome to the Unhinged History Podcast, the podcast where just before this, we talked about all of the plans we had to do and how they should take 46 seconds. And we're going to see an unfinished list in about 12 hours. Wish us luck. I'm host number one.
True story.
I'm Teresa.
I'm host number two.
And that's Angie. She has a name.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to
It's all
cut you
right.
off.
You didn't cut me off, you just didn't finish. So I just. See, when you don't cut me off, I have to delete the pauses. So it always sounds like you're cutting me off.
Host number two. My name's Angie. I'm not trying to cut her off. I'm just trying to get my act together, you guys.
And if she doesn't, it always sounds like that because I'm a mean editor. I'm a mean editor.
You know, one of us has to be the villain. Oh my God.
Villain. Villain the
Villain.
villain.
Yeah, one of us has to be the villain. I'll play the role while you secretly are the villain, you
Honestly, I try not to be secret about it when I'm honest. I try
know?
to be very upfront about what you're getting from me. And if you're confused about that, I've got nothing to say to you.
Well, first of all, if you're confused about that, how did you not see it coming?
I
We
mean,
were
look,
clear from the get.
and I think that's what throws people off. They're like, well, but you said you were the villain, so I knew I shouldn't. It's on
Could
me.
trust you.
Yeah, like you were honest about being untrustworthy.
Did we not learn anything from Jack Sparrow?
No, I don't think we did. I don't think we did.
You can always trust a dishonest man to be dishonest. Honestly.
Yeah.
Sage wisdom right there. Truly. I am dying to hear your story. I am so excited. Ever since I filled up 3 hours worth of information, I have been pondering about what you're going to tell me about.
Because you really have no idea.
Not a freaking clue, and I want to know.
My story comes from a friend of mine n named Natasha by birth, but people call her George. And she calls everybody and everything George. I still don't know why, and I've known her for 13, 14 years, maybe 15.
I love this.
Right. So George suggested the story. And George currently lives in Oahu, like you do. And when she said, I was like, yeah, I'll look into it. I'll look into it. And then it took me a while, right? It took me longer than I care to admit. Like, I'm not even going to tell you the date she told me to look into this, but I am going to tell you the story of Queen Liliuokalani.
So excited.
Do you know who
Go.
she is?
I do. Go.
Okay. So I went to my trusty National Park Service, which I swear to you is the backbone of this podcast. There is a podcast from
It's
History
the
Chicks.
National Park Service and sarcasm, but
I
that's
mean,
the backbone right
really,
there.
yeah, with an undercurrent of vodka.
Yeah.
Well, maybe whiskey when I think about averaging out your anise intake.
Well, if you think about averaging out what I talk about and what you drink, it's probably tequila.
Just because the last several have I've had margaritas doesn't mean that that's the standard. Like margarita, for whatever reason, pairs well with this. Like I might get too excited during the course of listening to you tell a story and just slam the whiskey, and that could go south rather quickly because I drink it neat.
I am gonna need you to listen to a story like that, okay?
All right, well.
I wanna watch the unravel.
Oof. Okay. My other sources, the National History Museum, because I'm just going to slide right into there. They have an article on Queen Liliuokalani by Carrie Lee Alexander. PBS, they had a short on American Masters, Queen Liliuokalani, the first and last queen of Hawaii. So here we go. Liliuokalani was born September 2nd, 1838, to High Chief and Chiefess. Chiefess looks
Chief
like a weird
Tess?
word. Female chief.
Yeah, okay.
That's what it is. But I mean, it just seems really, I don't see a lot of chief S's. And so that's, I thought it'd be fine
The
till I said it
misses.
out loud. And then it was like, no. So Caesar, Capicia, and Analia Kioa, Father God Almighty, Kihoa Kaloi, probably not how you say it, during the time it was, so it's custom for people to name their children after specific flowers or that are blooming, events, maybe some migratory birds that are coming in, all of those fun things. And she's named after the half sister of Kamehameha III, as is custom at the time. And she's named Liliu Loloku Walalina Wehea Kamehameha. So, okay, speed that up, played it like three times the speed. And that's probably closer to what it sound or supposed to sound like. Now, the half sister Elizabeth, she's suffering from a pretty bad eye infection, and she decided to use that as the timestamp of the event. So the future Queen of Hawaii's name means smarting, tearful, burning, sore eyes.
Amazing.
She's later baptized Lydia, but I'm not going to be referring to her by that at all. So just
That
know
is
that
not her name.
that's where we start. So her mother is the advisor to Kamehameha III. He's a king who in 1840 promulgated the first written constitution to the Hawaiian people, which seems really exciting. And Liliuokalani's claim to the throne is established when she becomes the child of Hanai parents. And it's something I looked up, and as much as I studied, I don't feel like I've got a firm understanding because it's like adoption. And it seems very like, I don't, so I could just say adopted parents, right? But it seems like there's so much more, and that it is so much more readily done and readily accepted. I don't have a lot of information. Like, as much as I've learned, the more I learn, the less I understand it. Because if you just look at the
Could it
articles,
be like a godfather type thing?
if you moved immediately into your godfather's house,
Oh, okay. So she's born to a different. So is she born to like a local clan chief, for lack of a better way to describe it? And then the main chief kind of absorbs her?
yes.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. And so, even though she's born to a high chief and chiefess, she is taken in by a different high chief and chiefess. But I guess they've got a higher standing in the royal family. And so, by age four, she starts attending the royal school and she learns English. Now, the school is ran by missionaries. And it is reserved solely for people who could inherit the throne, so contenders of this throne. And she is taught to be basically like, this is what it means to be Hawaiians. That's what you would assume, right? But since it's ran by missionaries, they're trying to teach her. I mean, they're going to colonize at their best. So it is going to be the boarding school of like Jane Eyre. It is going to be that deep. Like, she talks about going to bed hungry. And I'm sitting here thinking, like, y'all are screwing with the people that are going to take the throne. Like, don't you understand that maybe starving these kids or being mean or, super aggressive, maybe that's not the best thing. Maybe this isn't going to end well for you.
You would
Maybe don't
think.
bully someone who's going to, I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me, but bullying children never did. Now, okay, so she, because her mom, the adopted mom, is the advisor to the king, she ends up going to that school. And it's in her 20s that she ends up getting out of school, doing all that fun stuff. She really goes on this whole thing that'll make you love her. She goes door to door to raise money for Hawaii's first hospital,
That a girl.
right? In 1860, Queen's Hospital opens, and it treats new illnesses to them, like smallpox and influenza. And These illnesses disproportionately affected the Hawaiian people. Over a 50-year period, do you want to have any guesses on how much of the population these illnesses wipe out?
75%.
Damn, you're close. It's 80. Did you know that? How much have you read about her before? Like, am I telling you, like, do you have the biography sitting on your back?
No, I don't have the biography. We learned a lot about her when we were in Hawaii, and that was years ago.
Okay.
And I don't know anything about her childhood.
Okay.
What I do know is that anytime colonizers go somewhere they don't belong, a very high proportion of the indigenous people to that area get taken out by whatever disease we've just brought them.
Yeah, by a single sneeze wipes out darn near everybody.
Yeah.
And I kind of wish it would just take out the colonizers. Like maybe you get to a new spot, a black bear sneezes on you, and you're thinking, oh, this is it. This is how I meet my maker. And it wipes out the colonizers.
How come that never happens?
Why is the European Institute or Constitution so tough? Like the world would be a very different place if it was just the sneeze of a jaguar that wiped out all the colonizers.
I suspect because they've been colonizing for so long, they have a diversified immune system.
Now I want to study immunology. I feel like you might be onto something. Anyhow, zipping back to Hawaii in the mid-1800s, it's after finishing her exam. So we started about her going to in the 1860 or in 1860 opening the school or in the hospital. But she finishes her exams in 1853, and Liliuokalani travels with the royal court and kind of gets to go around the world a little bit. At this point, she is the highest, you know, red most noble unmarried woman in the kingdom.
Oh, dang.
Which, that's actually really stinking cool to have that, you know, level of, you know, basically the most available bachelor or bachelorette.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd want that.
I
I
mean,
mean, that was never me.
I'm pretty.
This changes by 1860. So the same year she opens the hospital, when Liliuokalani meets a American royal aide named John Owen Dominus, and they get engaged. Now,
of
Dominus,
course they do.
he's raised in Honolulu. So this seems like he grew up loving the palm trees. He grew up loving the island. So you would assume that this is going to work well. The couple gets married 2 years later. But Liliuokalani wrote in her memoir that it's a very unhappy marriage. And a lot of her life, she does a lot of things for children. You can tell she really wants to be a mom. And so not having kids seems like it's an unfulfilled need in her. So even though they never have children together, Liliuokalani adopts three children. And one
Oh,
of
okay.
the children she adopts is the child that Dominus has with her servant.
Oh, okay.
So, pretty magnanimous move.
Yeah.
But I would be having some big feelings about all of this.
Yeah, you know, I just think it doesn't matter what version of a person you are, royal families are so different.
I mean, yeah, you watch enough of The Crown to know, yeah, I don't want to be a royal. There's certain
I
things.
just want the palace, that's all.
Basically, I just want to be a rich person that has more money than sense. I think I want to be a rich eclectic. That's what I want.
Oh, yeah. Listen, I want to be wearing those, what did you call them?
Monocles?
Monarchal? No,
Monocle?
monarchal muumuus and be
Oh,
eccentric.
monarchical moo.
Yeah, that's what
Okay.
I want to do. I want to be that rich.
You know, I think if you hit a certain point of wealth, you're holier than thou art. Air-conditioned sweatpants become a fashion statement.
That's true. You are right about that. You're right.
Now, I kind of knew this next statement before, but it was something that I'd go, oh yeah, knit that back into this. So Queen Liliuokalani, she was a talented music composer. And at one point she said, to compose was as natural to me as to breathe. And in 1866, at the behest of Kamehameha V, she composes the national anthem for Hawaii. And it's
Is
used.
Kamehameha the Fifth her brother?
You say that. No, I don't think he is. She is related to the Kamehameha line. Now that I'm having to go off of notes, my brain is like, have fun with this one. I'm packing my bags and going on vacation. So Kamehameha, the line seems to be the name that you choose. Like, there were many people related to him that choose the name Kamehameha, and then they add the additional numeral after.
Okay.
So there are lots of Kamehamehas, and they all happen, one, two, three, four, five. But her brother's name is David. And I
Not what I
know
thought. All
that
right, carry
because
on.
it comes
Sorry.
up later. No, totally valid question, because it could have been like Land Before Time 12. It could have just been that many. So she, Liliu also does amazing things like establish a bank for women and sets up a fund to support the education of Hawaiian girls. And it every single step you learn about her, you're like, okay, there's another amazing thing she did. Like, she didn't sit still. She was always trying to use her powers for good. And it is just breathtaking. Like, God gave her to her with both hands, both empathy, the ability to do something with that empathy, and then skill, like music composition. So then, we were talking about Kamehameha. 1872, the king of Hawaii dies without naming a successor, which is problematic.
Always.
And he is the last of the Kamehameha kings. So, according to that new constitution that was created, a new king would be elected by legislature. So, King Lunalilo becomes the next royal to take the throne, and he's there until 1974, so 2 years. And then he dies.
1874.
Thank you. Whatever I said was wrong. I'm just not even going to like question you, because I've listened to enough of these afterwards to know that you catch my anachronisms.
Well, my brain literally went from 1872 to we are now driving station wagons across the Big Island. Went from black and white to color so fast.
And you're just like, no, go back a second. We haven't hit the moon landing yet. So Lunalilo, he's on the throne till 1874, and then he dies without naming his successor. And so that's really
Okay.
stinking unfortunate. So Liliuokalani's brother, David Kalakua, is elected as the next king of Hawaii, and he ends up competing, I'm going to say competing, against the former queen, Queen Emma, who is Kamehameha the fourth's Ivy. I should have looked that up. Is that
That's
four?
four.
Okay. Now, there's some real interesting things, right? Because you have several countries really vying for influence. You have Japan doing a lot to try to influence things, and then you have America, and then you have England. So you've got some really massive world powers doing stuff. Now, supporters of Queen Emma are the British, and David is supported by the Americans.
Okay.
And I don't think Hawaii had a dog in this fight, or not Hawaii. I don't think, well, Hawaii obviously did, but I don't think the Japanese did. Now, supporters of Queen Emma, they protested these results of this election, and many of them were imprisoned. And this is only the beginning of the political unrest that we see. Now, while Liliuokalani's brother is king, settlers and sugar planters from the United States, they end up trying to get more control over Hawaii. And when her brother's elected king, David Kalakaua, he's elected in 1874, and he makes his sister the heir apparent, and he gives her the name Liliuokalani, which means of the heavens. And she's not a big fan of this name. She's like, look, I am of the sore
Not
eyes.
nearly as fun that says I gave you an eye infection.
Right. And, this was really kind of interesting that, he's like, no, we need to name it something pretty, something amazing, of the heavens. And she's like, no, sore eye, which you will be too if, you make me change my name. And he's like, well, fine. Do you want to be the heir apparent? I guess you got to change your name. Kind of hate your brother.
But
But
okay.
yeah, so it's really like, huh, like it's a sibling rivalry. But I mean, it seems like he did it in the most loving way possible, as opposed to being like, your name went from being of the heavens to pus-filled eye infection. So maybe I should look at it, as that, as a glow up with names. Now, in the History Chicks podcast, they talk about as soon as David becomes king, he starts traveling the world and basically is mailing her his travel blog about all the great things he's doing, all of the beautiful things he's buying. Like, bro is really having a blast. And
Okay.
that's great, but his sister's at home doing all the work. And this is really happening when, another smallpox epidemic hits the country and starts hammering the Hawaiian natives. And so
Yeah.
Liliuokalani recognizes that the main vectors of disease are these immigrant workers that are coming in to work on the sugar plantations. So she puts travel bans in place. And
Got it,
she
girl.
like, yeah, like basically she's like, oh, this is a pandemic. Well, I'm going to open my pandemic playbook and we're going to really operate under COVID lockdown rules. And strangely, when everybody follows all of these rules and opens this playbook, things simmer down.
Weird.
Science. But, so as great as this is, and as many lives as she saves, the sugar planters are BS'd because they've got quotas to hit. They've got things to do. And so they're getting more amped up, more up in arms. Now, David comes back and he realizes from all of his advisors that she put it down and handled things. And then he kind of goes back to being his little playboy queen that, or king that he is. It is what it is. But so during her time as this, this princess, she travels the world, she meets with foreign dignitaries, and she is really doing everything she can to also bridge the gap between these foreign powers and the Hawaiian people. So we really see her
Okay.
doing this. And in 1886, she organizes the Liliuokalani's Educational Society to provide schooling for impoverished Hawaiian girls. So again, she just does even more, and it just, oh, my heart. And it's during Kalakaua's, I'm just going to say David's. I know I'm messing his name up, and every time I say it, I'm saying it a little bit different, and I'm hearing it in my own ears, and it's like, don't do that again, Teresa Marie. So during David's reign, the American landowners stage a coup, like we do, and they plot against the monarchy, and they force him to sign.
Like we do.
I
When
can't
you got a
lie.
skill set.
We come from a long line of colonizers, and all the colonizers came together in the melting pot. We formed the mightiest one. Well, they forced the king to sign the Bayonet Constitution in 1887, which gives him more power. It actually gives these white landowners a vote and removes privileges from Native Hawaiians and their ability to vote unless they own land, which is fabulous. It's exactly what we
I
would.
hate that.
Yeah. And when they're really pushed on this whole concept of the Bayonet Constitution, its legalities, their response was basically along the lines of, well, when the Americans penned their constitution, it wasn't illegal, but it had to be done.
Can we just Can we just take a second to the fact that it's called the bayonet constitution.
Is that a problem?
I have issues with that because it implies that at least one portion of the one party involved was forced at a bayonet point to sign.
Do you think that we're going to have some concerns with that? I mean,
yeah,
if you're on the
I feel
winning
like we
end of the
should.
bayonet, I mean, is that, I thought might makes right.
Not always.
Stay tuned because
colonizers.
At least we're consistent, right? You can expect a very specific plot line.
Yeah.
So what?
I'm just the plot line.
Oh, yeah. So 1891, not too long after the Bayonet Constitution signed, King David dies. And the royal officials have very little power. They have been really hamstringed by all of this. And so now Liliuokalani is the rightful heir to the Hawaiian throne. And it's on January 29th, 1891. So it's early in 1891 that she's sworn in as queen. And her main goals, she wants to reestablish the power and sovereignty of the monarchy, that the ones that her brother gave up. And she wants to fight, well, and she fights for the resignation of her brother's former staff. And when they initially refused, she ends up taking this to the Hawaiian Supreme Court, and they rule in her favor. And she also restores her supporters to the positions that they lost during the political changes. So she's like, look, my brother's people, get out. There's the door, and goes all the way to the Supreme Court. And then takes her people that were loyal and like puts them back, which, damn.
Baller.
And then she's like, I'm going to rewrite the Constitution. You know, that whole bayonet thing, we're going to tear that up. We're going to start over because that's malarkey.
Get it?
That's what she tries to do, at least. So 1892, she, along with the legislation or the legislature of the Kingdom of Hawaii, she passes an act to protect public lands from privatization. And this Highway Act declared that existing trails, roads, bridges, and as well as future government-built ones are public highways, no tolls. And in 1893, after Liliuokalani attempted to push forward a new constitution, the American landowner staged another coup.
Because we're consistent.
Yeah, and I mean, this part really is bizarre to me. Because this is a foreign country and there is a battalion of US Marines with cannon marching through the streets.
That feels normal.
I'm glad it feels, I mean, it's one of those like icky normal, like you're coming down with the flu. I feel like garbage, but at least it's normal.
Like, this is garbage, I understand.
Yeah, it might be garbage, but it's my garbage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So between 1893, 1898, Liliuokalani and her fellow Native Hawaiians mobilize against U.S. annexation of Hawaii, and they're using political parties in the press. They're using petitions. They also are sending delegations to Washington, D.C. And the press is actually doing a huge slam campaign against her as well. Like all the political cartoons are really depicting her atrociously. Like she is nothing more than a colored woman who is not fit to be queen. All of that. Liliuokalani publishes Hawaii's Story by Hawaii's Queen to lay out her arguments against annexation to counter these racist representations of herself and Native Hawaiians in the U.S. And when Grover Cleveland looks at this whole argument, interacts with her delegates, he agrees that the queen should be reinstated. But Congress rejected it.
This checks because Congress probably has a stake in sugarcane.
Well, and I mean, Hawaii is a strategic outpost that we could park our boats. Yeah.
We'll talk about that again in about 48 years.
I mean, some of her supporters sought to restore the monarchy through an armed revolt in 1895, and the provisional government imprisons Liliuokalani and forced her surrender to they force her to surrender the throne. And then this guy, whose last name is Dole, who is distantly related to the pineapple monopoly, Stanford Dole, he elects himself as president of Hawaii in this absence of power, and puts Queen Liliuokalani under house arrest for 8 months.
Checks.
Yeah, and that I just like, as I'm like imagining what it would be like to live during this, it is armed people breaking into her private residence, escorting her to the palace, which doesn't sound bad on its face to be imprisoned. And for the months that she's held captive, she creates this beautiful quilt where she's sewing her story into it, and she's composing hymns that are heartbreakingly gorgeous.
This checks.
And the Americans have forsworn her getting any local news or foreign, like they just, there is a
Yeah.
media block. So the Hawaiian people are smuggling newspapers in by wrapping bouquets of flowers in these newspapers and bringing them into her palace, which is great. And she is smuggling her songs out to also be published. So she's contain like they've got this flow of information. And it's during this time that she wrote Aloha Oi. So it
I
was
love
originally, well,
that.
I take that back. It was originally written in 1878, but she transcribes it while she's in under house arrest, and then it becomes a popular national song. And that is like the quintessential Hawaiian song. Like
Oh
it
yeah, it
was in
is.
Lilo and Stitch, it's been in SpongeBob. It is, you know what? Think of a Hawaiian song, you're only thinking of one. That's it.
Yeah. I love that Lilo and Stitch and SpongeBob are the standard here.
Did I mention I'm a mom?
Wild.
I know, right? Like, I might have gone with an Elvis movie because I think it doesn't Elvis cover it at some point.
I think so.
Yeah. So Liliuokalani, she continues to advocate for Hawaiian sovereignty and the cultural retention for the rest of her life. And despite everyone, I say everyone because Native Hawaiian, even Grover Cleveland, everybody's resistance, the US's annexes Hawaii in 1898. And that is just bizarre to me that we can be like, you're mine now. We're like that white chick at a bar stealing baseball caps. It's mine.
Yeah.
And
Yeah,
to do
you're
that with
not
a
wrong.
country, like, it's
Oh, you can't just
mind
do
blowing.
that?
Like, look, I'm a white chick. I have stolen baseball caps, but I don't understand this. Like, this is, I feel like that maybe I've just been
Yeah.
playing in the minor leagues.
Step up. You're not on to your colonization skills here.
Right.
You
You
can just
know,
take a country.
I need to really improve it.
Your villain arc here is floundering.
Good callback, and I'll get on it.
Mm-hmm.
So 1909, she establishes another trust, but this one's for Hawaiian children in need, and she leaves her entire estate to help Hawaii's children. And then she dies November 11th, 1917, and she's given a royal burial. And her
Good.
life remains an inspiration to the Hawaiian natives and many others. The Ala Kahakai Historic National Historic Trail is established in the year 2000 and preserves a network of ancient and historic and modern trails, only possible to the foresight of Liliuokalani's Highway Act of 1892. And this is just one of the many ways that her legacy is still visible in that entire Hawaiian landscape. And Hawaii becomes the 50th state in 1959. And then in 1993, Clinton issues an apology admitting that the overthrow of Queen Liliuokalani was illegal.
I'm glad we got there.
A day late and a dollar short, but
Yeah, that at least it's acknowledged.
yeah, but you know,
Not that that does much, but
as my grandfather says, one oh shit wipes out all your attaboys.
I mean, in this case, very much so, right?
Yeah.
Ugh, I love her.
Mm-hmm.
I love that this in my opinion, she was an incredibly powerful woman, and not just because of her position, but because of her disposition. Like,
Yeah.
does that,
Mm-hmm.
yeah, I
Well, and
just.
like one of the sources talked about how her brother King David, in a different time period, would have been an incredible king for the people because of his life, his vitality, how he wanted to really, but he was not capable of looking at his white friends and seeing them for the money-grubbing, power-hungry creatures that they were. And
That's
that if
unfortunate.
they hadn't been in the picture, then he would have just come on in, let's be relaxed and groovy. You know, like he had that kind of personality, which different time frame would have been fantastic.
Yeah. Dang it. It's always the white friends that cause the problem.
Yeah, pretty much. Like I am in this picture and I don't like it.
Please remove.
Yeah,
My story is wildly different than your story.
I expect nothing less. I think if you had told the story of Queen Liliuokalani, it would have been wildly different.
We do have that effect on each other, don't we?
We do.
My story is just a giant gossip column.
Girl, bring it. My sources
Where
are Reddit. I'm
Yes.
joking. I'm joking.
Believe it or not, I have no Reddit source on here. Although, no, yeah, I can't say I even found a Reddit source while looking.
Okay.
My main source is National Geographic, so
Girl.
I know. I have an obituary from the New York Times, and then an obituary from the LA Times. Two separate incidences, but
Two separate
both chock
obituaries
full. Two separate obituaries, but both chock full of good information.
for the same human?
No.
I was about to say, I was really getting curious.
No, sorry. I will tell you though that I watched a couple of YouTube videos about my person, and it was actually really fun. One of them was the BBC's like broadcast the day of her of the main event of her life. So that was really cool to get to see that we still have that footage.
Is this Lily or Lizzie 2's coronation?
No. That would be awesome though.
You licked your lips and looked
No.
askance, like right as you like. So I'm like, I am close to something.
No, but you are close to something because there is a royal affair involved in this story that is not Lizzie 2.
Is this Tampon Gate?
No.
Okay.
Think before. I'm pretty sure if I remember the years of Tampon Gate. I'm going to tell you the story of Beryl Markham. Are you familiar with this name?
No.
Okay. So the other day, well, I guess it's not the other day now. It's like 3 or 4 weeks ago now. The world learned that we may know where Amelia Earhart's plane is, right? Okay,
Yeah, but I feel
so.
like I've known that. Like, I didn't hear any new info. I was like, I mean,
Right,
I saw
okay,
that
so
documentary years ago.
I. Look, we've seen this one.
With the coconut crabs.
In fact, I was like so excited on those initial headlines that I was like, you know what? when we get to Women's History Month, I'm going to tell her the story of Amelia Earhart. But then I was like, that's such a well-known, like, if you don't know anything about Amelia Earhart, if you've never heard her name, you have been living under a rock, like,
facts.
As an
Facts.
American female, right? So I was like, I can't do her. As much as I would love to, I just can't. So at the same time as looking at those headlines, I came across this little kind of, I wouldn't say a throwaway line, but like just a fun little ditty that directed me to the story of Beryl Markham. And she's a doozy. And I'm just going to say her story is one that could have been 3 episodes long also. So if there's anything that I am telling you in this that you want more information on, there is plenty of information to be read. She wrote a memoir. She's had biographies. Like there's a list of things.
Gotcha.
And I'm going to start with this amazing National Geographic quote. Beryl Markham was the daring British pilot who quietly crash-landed her way into the history books when she made the first solo east-west crossing of the Atlantic. It was a highlight of an enigmatic and occasionally scandalous life. So scandalous.
I'm
She was
taking it
born.
She did a little bit more than wear pants.
You'd be right. She was born October 26, 1902, in the village of Ashwell in County of Rutland, which at one point or another was part of Lancashire, England, but it's not anymore. I was a little confused at every source telling me a different birthplace, but they were all in the same place. So I had to work that out for myself. But anyway.
Okay. It was a midwife. Midwife traveled around. You're like, well, I mean, we know the midwife's home range.
Kind
Not
of
that it
in
was a
this
free
five
range
mile
birth
radius.
mother. It wasn't like, you know, it was in a field somewhere between these seven hills.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm just going to say right now, I might have found the best name, if not the funniest name, like the funnest name to say so far. Her father's name was Charles Baldwin Clutterbuck. And I'm just going to need you to say Clutterbuck one time because it's a lot of fun to roll off the tongue.
Clutterbuck.
There you go.
That really sounds like a name you would give to a man who is a hoarder. Like an old timey. He is a clutterbuck.
You know, I don't think you're wrong. I'm here for that. Like I can hear a little old Southern man saying that. Yeah.
You don't want to marry him. He comes from a long line of prodigious clutterbucks.
Exactly. God, I can't wait till you're old. You're going to be so funny.
Especially when you
So,
can't give me factoids like this. You're just really priming the pump.
It's going to be glorious. I'm just saying. So Mr. Clutterbuck was an exceptional horse trainer. And by age four, she and her father had moved to Kenya, which at the time was considered colonial British East Africa. They would go on to establish a horse racing farm there near Ninjaro, which is near the Great Rift Valley. According to the Washington Post, quote, in June 1904, Captain Charles Clutterbuck and his wife Clara arrived in Nairobi, Kenya. Clutterbuck, a cavalry officer whose military career had come unstuck, may have had some idea of what he was letting himself in for. Clara, his wife, did not. She arrived with two children, Dickie, who was to be 5 in July, and Beryl, who was 2 and a half, and found herself
Dickie
in a thatched...
Clutterbuck.
I know, right?
Okay, sorry. You're just not sneaking stuff past
Yep.
me. I just want you to know I'm paying attention to you today.
Dickie is my favorite quote-unquote English nickname. It's just
Yep.
like, how can you say that with a straight face? But anyway, I digress. So she finds herself in a thatched mud hut behind a dairy. She was very unhappy. 2 years later, Clara leaves, taking her son with her and leaving the daughter behind. As far as I'm concerned, her daughter was to say, nearly 80 years later, I was more or less abandoned by my mother. End quote. That makes me so angry. I wish we had some understanding of why she took one child and not the other, because that feels like it made a difference for the rest of Beryl's life.
Right.
Like, but anyway, Dad puts her on a horse by 2 years old. Like, before she can fully walk, she can fully ride. So she's, in my opinion, not having the worst childhood.
You know, this is what we hear of a
But
lot of the women that I'm going to say that you bring us. I tend to bring women who may be strong, but their dads didn't teach them the things. Like, I am thinking strictly of Julie Dobney right now. Like, this has very strong
yeah.
Julie Dobney vibes. Like, dad was a stable master, taught her to ride a horse, and taught her how to use a sword and kick all the boys' ass.
Sword, yeah. Yeah, you know, you're not wrong that she and Julie Dobney would have either been best friends or mortal enemies. So, whatever the reason, Mom and Dickie leave, and Dad and her begin the adventure of a lifetime. This is, remember, early 20th century Africa. And for me, I don't know if this is the same for you, but for me, this is a very like romanticized time and place. Like when I was a kid, that was the adventure I wanted to go on. I wanted to be in Africa on a ranch doing the things. She spoke Swahili and several African dialects that she learned almost before she learned English. And I'm here for this, right? She knows how to ride a horse. Her childhood is spent in the African bush with African children learning how to hunt, and she played, and she just had this wild, incredible childhood, and I am so here for it. Her biographer, Mary Lovell, writes, quote, Beryl seemed to tread easily between the two cultures, taking from each what she needed. Had she remained in England with her mother and brother, her life would have been vastly different. Had she been born African, she would certainly never have been allowed to participate in the hunting pastimes, which are purely the preserve of male warriors. So, as far as I'm concerned, minus mom skipping town, she has like this golden, dreamy childhood. Like, she is doing the things. By the time she's 16, she meets and marries Captain Andrew Laidlaw Jock Purvis, and he is a British Army officer and farmer. And she marries
So
him
wait. You said that with
October 15, 1919.
quotations around Jock that nobody saw.
Like, Jock's his nickname.
Okay, that's what I was
Like, that's what he
confirming.
goes as.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry, I realize quotations do nobody any good when I'm just airing them.
Yeah, like for those of you who can't see her do the Nixon, I am not a crook,
True story. Sorry, guys.
peace marks in the air. Carry on.
So her and Jock, she's 16. They're married in 1950, excuse me, married in 1919.
Okay.
Right about this time, we learn that Dad's not so great with money and he sort of runs out of it. And then, unclear why, he decides to go to Peru. Because I guess why not? Perhaps maybe he's following gold. I'm unclear. But anyway, she's married and chooses to stay behind in Africa.
To be fair, she should be off payroll, so this seems okay.
Yeah. But and as we can tell, she has led already a very adventurous and pretty fearless life. She's known for pushing the boundary of cultural norms. I mean, even simply by the fact that her time was spent fully involved in things that the male gender did, and I super love her for this because think of England in 1920. Like, you're not going to be doing the things that she got to do in Africa as a female. And I
Yeah.
just, like, I love this for her. At age 18, she would become the first woman in Africa to receive a racehorse trainer's license.
Whoa.
Wild, right? By 1925, her first marriage is over.
The
Kind of a
way you
bummer, but
say
here
that,
we
I
are.
mean, I'm imagining a serial monogamist.
No,
Okay.
you're just
Oh,
imagining
okay.
a cereal. You're just imagining a cereal. Enter at this point Dennis Fitch Hatton and Tom Campbell Black. Tom Black was an RAF veteran who had served during the Great War, and he brought flying to the continent. In September 1928, Black's plane becomes the first aircraft registered in Kenya. Additionally, he is also established as the country's first commercial air service. It's called Wilson Airways. In Beryl's memoir, which, by the way, is called West with the Night, and that just sounds so exciting.
Wow. That would be a
I
movie
haven't
I'd go
read it yet because I
see.
write. Yeah. I cannot wait to get my hands on this book. I think it's going to be so good. She writes, quote, "Something about that irreverent contrivance of fabric and wires and noise blustering through the chaste area of the night had stirred the course of my thoughts to restless eddies," end quote. So, between Tom Black and Dennis Fitch Hatton, who was, funny enough that you mentioned movie, he was the renowned big game hunter that was featured in the movie Out of Africa. So,
Oh,
yeah.
okay.
So between the two of them, she's coached by Tom Campbell Black. Markham learned to fly, and thanks to both of these two gentlemen's influence, she becomes the first woman in Kenya to obtain a pilot's license. In 31, she gets her commercials pilot's license by the end of that year. Tom teaches her to fly by instinct. She learns to fly without earphones and tools of the like, teaching her to literally do it on the fly.
Wait a minute. So you're saying by using the boy band name, she can somehow
Instinct.
instinct. I heard instinct.
Instinct. Yeah.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
Now I'm seeing Justin Timberlake
It's gonna
in the
be
plane behind
May.
her. Yeah, that's exactly
Okay.
what I'm seeing. Instinct. Sorry, I may not have been very clear on that word.
I was just like, did I just learn a new definition for that? Carry on.
A minute, I have questions.
Yeah.
I need to talk to NSYNC now. Put a call in. So he basically teaches her how to fly blind, which is amazing to me.
Right.
Like, oh, let's do it, right? Okay, so she works as a bush pilot, spotting big game animals from the air and signaling their locations to safari on the ground, among other commercial things, transport and things like that. But also, let's not forget that she's still winning horse races, such as the prestigious Nairobi St. Ledger horse race. She wins that in 1926. So Mama's got stuff going on.
Okay,
You
so
know, she's
she's
busy.
busy. She's doing the things.
She's doing the things. Somewhere between 1926 and 1927, she marries the wealthy Mansfeld Markham, from which she takes his last name and wears it for the rest of her life. It's interesting to note that Mansfield Markham was the second son of Sir Arthur Markham, and he is a film producer and director. Could your life be any more 1920s glamorous to
I
have been
mean,
raised in Africa?
and all of
Right?
these names are profoundly British. Like,
You are
more
absolutely
British than
right.
the
Clutch
last,
your
which is
pearls.
bizarre to me. This
Your British
episode
is
has been brought
Britishing.
to you by colonizers. Carry on.
Truly. So here's where the gossip starts. Are you ready?
Oh, I'm
Because,
braced for impact.
in 1928, while pregnant with her child, Jarvis, if I'm pronouncing that right, it's spelled very different than what I would think it would be, but
Okay.
Gervase, Jarvis, she enters into an affair with Prince Henry, the Duke of Gloucester. Not our Prince Henry. 1928's Prince Henry, known formally as Harry, the son of George V. And he meets her on a trip to Africa, to Kenya, and he is immediately like smutten.
Smitten? Smut. I feel like smutten would be a
Mutton?
mutton is lamb.
Smutton?
Smitten.
Mutton, smutton? Smitten?
Smitten.
What's the past tense?
Smittened.
Smitten? He's smitten with her.
I'm guessing
He's making
smittened.
big heart eyes.
Okay.
Just,
Auga. All
yeah.
right.
Okay. It's
Smutten.
also believed that that simultaneously, Beryl is also having an affair with Harry's older brother, Edward, the Prince of Wales.
I mean, why limit yourself?
Live your best life. So National Geographic has a great little roundup of events that from this time frame. Quote, the prince was the third son of George V, whom she met when he came out to Kenya on a safari with his brother, the future Edward the Fifth, Sixth, Seventh. The liaison blossomed and eventually led to the
I like
prince
watching
selling.
Your brain count that. Sorry, carry on.
It did not look like seven at all. And I was like, wait, nope, that's definitely seven.
I mean, earlier I was like, that's four, right? Yeah, no, you're fine.
Maybe. So the liaison blossomed and eventually led to the prince settling a 15,000 pound in trust for her to pay for an annuity for Markham for life, according to Lovell, to avoid a divorce case in which the prince would be named. In those days, Beryl was sensationally good looking. She was immaculate, great fun. She mixed with the high and the mighty. She was a party animal, and I think everyone loves her, recalls Sir David, her I believe he was her great nephew.
Okay.
She was smart, she loved flying, and she was a natural. I think it gave her the freedom which she wanted as a child and which she was damned good at. Okay, so if you want the full gossip column, and trust me, it is juicy, but we do not have time for me to tell you everything that happened with this royal affair, dailymail.uk has this article that is absolutely stunning. And if you can imagine the queen herself opening the purse strings to shut Mr. Markham up, because our boy Henry here is so in love with Beryl, he is convinced that's his son.
Dang.
Markham wants to name him as the reason for their divorce. And the queen is like, oh no, we are
How much to
opens
make
the
you
purse
go
strings.
away?
Yes. So the article's pretty lengthy and just honestly great fun for someone looking for some gossip that is totally irrelevant to our lives today. Here for it. I love people's gossip of people I don't know, you know? So we're going to fast forward a little bit to 1936. On September 5 of 1936, a couple of fishermen discover a woman floundering her way through a bog in Cape Breton on the eastern shores of Nova Scotia. Now, picture in the background, Summer wears her single-engine plane, its nose down deep in the moss and the peat, and its tail is sticking up in the air. She's got blood on her face, and she's, like, just covered in this peat. She's not looking her best. It went all the way up to her waist of what was formerly her white overalls. And she says politely to them, I'm Mrs. Markham. I've just flown from England. Because that's how you crash land an airplane.
I love all of this. If you're
right?
going to crash land in a bog,
she
make
considers
sure you're in white.
Indeed. It's said that when they like pull her from the bog and they kind of collect her, she asks for a telephone and they direct her to a phone that's like encased in rock outside that's there for like shipwreck people. Like it's just there for this exact reason. She dials whoever she calls and says something to the effect of, it's Miss Markham. I'm going to need a taxi, please. And if you don't love that, like, come on, man. This woman is about her business, and I am so here for it.
This is the woman
She
who would
considers
have relations with two royal brothers.
Absolutely, yes. She considers the flight a complete failure because she doesn't make it to her intended target, which would have been New York. But the rest of the world basically hoists her up on their shoulders and throws her a parade. She's the first woman to cross the Atlantic from east to west.
Wow.
Amelia Earhart did it, but going the other way, using the wind to her advantage. And Amelia Earhart herself said to the New York Times, quote, I'm delighted beyond words that Mrs. Markham should have been successful in her exploit and has conquered the Atlantic. It was a great flight.
Women
Women
supporting
supporting
women.
women.
Hype women.
Yes.
Hell yes.
Right? So by now you can tell that she has no qualms with several lovers and husbands. And whatnot, but National Geographic suggests that, quote, Beryl Markham's flight remains a staggering achievement. She said she did not do it for the glory, apparently. In her biography, Markham, the biography is called Straight On Till Morning, which, how Peter Pan vibes is that? Mary Lovell suggests she undertook the mission for her broken heart. She thought that by setting the record, she hoped to win back the affections of her former lover and teacher, Tom Campbell Black.
Aww.
Yeah. She later says, record flights have never actually interested me very much at all for myself. She was just in it to win back Mr. Black.
Look,
She
we've all
did.
done stuff
She
to get
ends up.
attention.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Markham tells of adventures in her memoir, The West with the Night, which was published in 1942. So this is really interesting. So it's got really great reviews in the press in 1942, but World War II sort of puts the kibosh on book sales at the time. So the book sits unknown for many, many years. In 1982, there's letters from Ernest Hemingway. They come to life. By a California restaurateur, which is just a strange sentence to say,
I'm waiting for the
called
end of it.
George Gutknust. Gutknust. When he gets a collection of Ernest Hemingway's letters, including one in which Hemingway's praised Markham's writing. Quote, did you read Beryl Markham's book, West with a Night? She has written so well and so marvelously well that I was completely ashamed of myself as a writer. I felt that I was simply a carpenter with words, picking up whatever was furnished on the job and nailing them together, and sometimes making an okay pig pen. But this girl, who is, to my knowledge, very, very unpleasant, and we might even say a high grade bitch, and write rings around all of us. Who consider ourselves as writers. It's really a bloody wonderful book. Her book in 1982 becomes an instant hit. I
I love
love
all
that.
of this.
Thank you so much, Hemingway, for
And
your wordsmithing there.
I love how everybody's just like, she's amazing, she's enthralling, she's hopelessly beautiful. And he's like, she's a grade A bitch. You know,
Yes,
and that just goes
which,
to show you can't please
okay.
everybody.
In the weirdest way possible, she pleased him.
In the ways he
So she
needed to be
chooses,
pleased.
in fact, she chooses to live many years in the United States, and she did marry a third time. Incidentally, she is married to a writer who tries to pass off her memoir as his book. And it's not until the Hemingway letters come to light that it has finally put the kibosh that she was the author and not him. But anyway, she moves back to Kenya and her horses in 1952. She dies in 1986 at 84 years old after an operation on a leg that she broke over the weekend when she tripped over her dog in a Nairobi cottage. Wild,
I
right?
have a dog who would be that cause.
Right.
Looking at you, Ruby.
Yeah. I so her life is just one wild story after the other, and despite its challenges, she lived it. And I just wish there were more, like we had access to more women's stories like hers. She had absolutely no qualms with doing what she pleased. If that meant winning a horse race or flying across the Atlantic or taking two princes as lovers, like she did all the things. And every quote that I read from her had that same air of, I'm Mrs. Markham, and I will do what I please. Oh, this woman's a hero, for sure. I do have a picture because she is quite the looker, if you will.
Go on. Okay, so she is showing me a picture of a slender woman. She has got hair that would go to her shoulders if it were straight. It's got a very substantial wave to it.
Like the finger wave.
The finger wave, yes. Very oval face, big doll-shaped eyes.
You'll notice on her forehead the bandage.
Yeah, I didn't know
This
if that
photo
was
was
like,
taken.
it looked like it could have been like a damaged photo, but yeah, it is a bandage now that you mention it.
This photo was taken shortly after she got pulled out of the peat bog. I mean,
Okay, and in that photo, okay, she's showing me the picture of what we could only call an aviatrix.
absolutely. I believe I could be wrong, but she is wearing a silken blouse.
Oh, definitely. With a leather bomber jacket, a silk scarf underneath the collar that is joined together just above her breastbone. And she's wearing the quintessential flying goggles. Yep.
When I found that picture, I squealed. Like, this is what I wanted to see.
Yeah, no, everything
Yeah,
about that.
so.
I kind of wish she was in those white overalls now so I could imagine her in the peat bog.
Sorry, I don't have that picture.
I mean,
So yeah,
that would have been a very coordinated photo to have somebody who coincidentally had a camera.
today we would have been at we'd have had that option.
Oh yeah. Today we would have tons of Instagram filter Instagram stories and reels and YouTube shorts and the whole nine. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the story of Beryl Markham, which, on the one hand, I'm sad that I didn't do Amelia Earhart, but on the other hand, we know Amelia Earhart, and the
Right.
name Beryl Markham is kind of brand new, you know?
And see, I think
For me, anyway.
this is one thing I like about this is when I find somebody I don't really know well or know that, and I'm like, and I go to do like, I'm going to listen to a podcast on her while I do dishes. And it's like, oh, there's no podcasts. Oh, like,
Yeah.
and I think we need more of that as opposed to like, let me retell you the story of Lizzie too. Those stories are
Right.
important,
Like, I'm
but
sure. Yeah. And I'm sure there's events in the famous people's lives that we don't know, but how much information are we regurgitating to get to that?
yeah.
Right? Like, I don't know. She was so fun. And the more I discover people I knew nothing about, the funner it gets because you think, okay, yeah, you have Amelia Earhart and you have all these, like Bessie Coleman, these amazing aviators, right? There were more.
Oh, there
There
were, but
were, like, there's so many things we don't know yet, you know?
and I would argue that as cool as Beryl Markham is, I would argue that telling Bessie Coleman's story does more glory and uplifting to
Oh,
because
absolutely.
as soon as you tell Bessie Coleman's story, you are uplifting several marginalized communities.
Absolutely.
You know, Beryl Markham,
Absolutely.
great, but you're really only perpetuating the success of rich white women.
Pretty much. Yeah. And obviously the vast difference between her and Bessie Coleman is I chose her
Money,
because her story is
gender,
so
or sorry,
scandalous.
gender's the same. Well, yeah, Bessie Coleman,
Yeah.
she was just straight laced and just got it done.
Yeah, she did. And she's such a badass and a person that should be, for lack of a better word, idolized. Whereas Beryl Markham should be respected for her feats and the fact that she is a human being. But her story is fun to tell from the aspect of, like, you did what? Excuse me?
Well, you know what? The scandals
Pardon?
make her exciting.
Yes.
Bessie would have never been in the same room as nobility.
But her story is even more exciting because of what
Right.
she overcame to do it. Yeah,
As opposed to
100%.
like banging two royal brothers.
Oops.
Yeah, my bad.
I'm Mrs. Markham.
You know, I bet Beryl Markham would never have said my bad. She'd have gone, mea culpa. Just very much like, mea culpa.
Darn. See, there, that's my story.
I love it. love all of that. And if you're like, oh my goodness grief, I can't believe Angie missed that one zinger from Beryl's life. How could you not say, let us know. We're here for it. You know what? We deserve the commentary because, you know, you're just as much
We
of this.
like it.
Yeah, like you're part of this conversation, even though we can't hear you right now. But we will. We'll listen. Rate, review, subscribe. Really let us know. And reach out to your favorite wallpaper designer and just let them know about this podcast because hot diggity dang, I'm sure they are there. And on that note, goodbye.
Bye.